From KMUW Wichita.
From Toronto, Ontario.
And from Armenia, Spain.
This is You're Saying It Wrong. Let's talk words. Let's talk literary pet peeves. Look, you can't change the words on the page. Or can you? I'm Fletcher Powell, host and producer at KMUW in Wichita, Kansas, and joining me, as they do each week, language experts and New York Times best-selling authors Kathy Petras and Ross Petras. Hi, Kathy. Hi, Ross. We have a lot of different things to talk about today. Before we really get going, though, I want to just say thank you to BayBay106, who left us a wonderful review on Apple Podcasts. BayBay106, that's B-A-E-B-A-E, by the way. 106 says, these three bring such appreciation of how we all communicate. Super smart, relatable, and hilarious. And then a little heart emoji.
I think we should heart her back, or him. Let's heart Bay.
And keep those reviews coming as long as you like us. If you don't, yeah, you don't have to bother.
Exactly right. Yeah. Exactly right. Just, keep it to yourself. Okay, the next thing, it's another mailbag that we just got a kick out of, so we had to share this. It was a mini pet peeve addendum email, as we called it, from our listener Matt, who wrote that one of his personal pet peeves, as opposed to, as he put it, the more standard fare, is Jabberwock.
Okay, stop for a second. Do you want to see if Fletcher knows the
I believe he might have seen the email. So.
Oh my gosh, you're right. I'm it's a bad spy. Okay, go on.
This is why Ross does not work for the CIA. Or does he? Okay, Jabberwock. He wrote, the creature is not called Jabberwocky. He is the Jabberwock. Mm-hmm. The poem is called Jabberwocky. The dang Johnny Depp movie got this wrong and called the creature Jabberwocky. So that got us thinking.
It did, but one thing I was going to say, I looked it up after he said that. It's all over the place, oh, Jabberwocky sure. as the creature. I was shocked. Mm-hmm. It's everywhere.
Yeah.
But anyway, we're going to go on now to Kathy's alliteration, which she wanted me to say. Because you had that expectant look of like, why isn't Ross saying my alliteration? But Kathy's great alliteration, which is petty pet peeves for persnickety pedants.
Oh, lovely. Okay? Yes, that's good.
I know, it's very good.
Thank you. I was proud.
We're going to give you a little quiz on this, Fletcher. We're going to ask you, number one, this is the first one. Why would someone get irritated if they heard someone else talk about how Frankenstein marauded through the village and was terrified of fire?
That's because Frankenstein was the name of the doctor, and his monster was not named Frankenstein. So it's unlikely that the doctor would be the one marauding through the village.
That's partially correct, Fletcher. But there's an error even there. But let's first, we'll talk about that in a minute. Let's
yeah,
first go.
Just, you had the same thing where I was a little like, ooh. Yeah.
I know. Thank you, Fletcher. I know. Is it, you're right.
Is it because the doctor was actually Frankenstein?
No.
Oh, yeah, I love that. We just watched it again. My wife had almost never seen the whole film. And Alex and I both love it, our son.
Oh, God, I adore it.
And I finally made her watch the whole thing. She liked it, but didn't love it. And what? I don't see... I think there are two types of people in the world.
I think you need a divorce.
I told her I really love her for most everything, but that one is like a huge kind of gap in our marriage. I could have. She liked it, but you have to love it, I think. But whatever.
Yes.
You are correct, Fletcher, and partially. It is the book is Frankenstein or the Modern Prometheus, and indeed, Frankenstein is the person who brings out the monster, who is never called anything but the monster, possibly Adam, the creature.
I was going to say the Adam I remember.
Adam, I remember.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And we had actually these two things we found. Wisdom is knowing that Frankenstein is the monster. That's actually an interesting point. He is a monster in that he creates the monster.
Ah.
Then I love this kid thing, which leads to our next problem with your statement earlier. Actually, Frankenstein is the punk med school dropout.
He's not a doctor.
He is not. So is Victor Frankenstein a doctor? Not in the book. Nowhere in the book does it say he's the doctor of anything. In fact, they have him as a student.
Yes.
Ah, very good.
Do you know where he's a student? What university he's a student of? Kathy is frantically looking. I think it's the University of Ingolstadt. I think.
I was thinking Heidelberg.
Have you guys seen the post online? It's probably made its way around everywhere. Probably Reddit and the old Twitter and Blue Sky and so on about the very end of the book Frankenstein. Have you seen this?
Oh, no.
This is lovely. I'm going to read it to you. I've got it right in front of
read
me.
Read it, yeah.
Okay, so here's the printed words at the actual end of Shelley's book. He sprang from the cabin window, as he said this, upon the ice raft which lay close to the vessel. He was soon borne away by the waves and lost in darkness and distance. Now that's the actual end. But someone wrote in the words underneath it, as he drifted away, I could just make out his final words. It's okay if you call me Frankenstein instead of Frankenstein's monster. I really don't mind. The end.
I really like that. That's great.
Oh, that's brilliant. I wish I'd seen it.
Well, we do always call him Dr. Frankenstein, though. That's weird.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That was a new one. I mean, I read Frankenstein in college, so it was many, many years ago. So I honestly don't remember the book.
Oh, this is the next question, though. Who was Victor Frankenstein's first assistant?
Oh, Igor was not his first assistant. I don't know.
Actually, in the book, apparently there wasn't a real assistant. Apparently it came from theatrical adaptation in 1823. And our author saw the show and liked it. And there was an assistant, but his name was really disappointing. Fritz.
Isn't that awful?
It ain't Igor. Igor, that's right.
And they said that initially, the original film, the first Frankenstein, again, it wasn't Igor. It was just an assistant, but he wasn't Igor. And they said that in the sequels to the film, there was an Igor spelled with a Y, and he was in a blacksmith, an insane blacksmith. So,
oh, wow.
I know, it's weird.
Yeah. Are we talking like the James Whale films or even earlier?
I don't know.
I think we're talking earlier.
I've got one thing here on the credits. The assistant is named Fritz in James Whale's 1931 film.
Oh, it is?
Yeah, isn't that interesting?
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Fritz just doesn't do me, I gotta admit.
No, Igor. Igor. I can't do it. Whatever. That's bad.
Very bad. I'm sorry, Ross. I don't mean to be rude, but please don't do that again.
Okay, we're going to go to the next one now, moving into Dracula. Here, what's the problem with this statement? This is from the book. Again, we're not talking about the film right now. Count Dracula rushed back to his coffin, anxious to escape the first rays of the rising morning sun.
Well, there are only two things there. Is this is not actually the words from the book. Is that what's going on?
No.
Yes.
No.
Okay. So either he was never actually called Count Dracula in the book, or he didn't actually sleep in a coffin.
No. Well, in the books, he's not afraid of, and he doesn't die in daylight.
Oh.
He can go out in the sun.
Oh, wow, really?
Actually, in the Francis Ford Coppola Dracula, he's out in the sun.
Yeah.
No, he can. The key thing with that, he's not wild about the sun, but apparently, like, he can change. In the sun, he can't change into anything, and he's slightly weakened. But in the morning, the rising sun, and the afternoon at noon, and in the evening, he can change into bats or wolves or whatever. But the sun is not great for him. He's not wild about it, but it's not horrible.
Huh.
Now we're going to move away from monsters and to another petty, pedantic peeve.
This is your favorite pet peeve, I think, isn't it, Kat?
And we've talked about this before, yes, I know. So you're going to know this, Fletcher. Why do so many people in the know wince when someone refers to Byron's famous poem, Don Juan?
Right.
This is a gimme.
We have talked about this one before because it's Don Juan.
Mm-hmm.
Correct. Very good.
And that's not just what I learned, having not really read it, or if I have, I hadn't remembered. What you told me was that there are parts in the poem that rhyme with Ju-on. It's not just that he says the title funny.
It's an
integral part of the poem itself.
Ju-on rhymes with true one. Yes.
Yeah, that's how you know it's pronounced. Because you can't say he is not the true one. I'll take our friend Don Juan.
Exactly. Well, yeah.
I did love, we mentioned this, but I'll do it again. Most people do think Don Juan, obviously, and you do sound like a bit of a tit to when you go Don Ju-on. But I love the fact that Byron, when he was talking with friends, wrote to friends, he called him Donnie Johnny. I thought that like gets around the whole problem.
Okay, the next one quickly, I think you probably know this. Romeo, Romeo, wherefore art thou Romeo? Uh-huh. Kathy and I love this one. Because I think we both learned this distinction reading Peanuts comics when we were little kids. Because Linus explains to Lucy that wherefore means why. And I love Lucy's response. Now that I know that, what do I do?
Yeah. Right, because she's not asking, where are you, Romeo? She's asking, why are you, Romeo?
Yes.
Right. That always got me, because if you look at it, there's no comma. So, I mean, it's obvious.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, right. I mean, it's not obvious if you don't know that wherefore means why, but...
Yeah, true.
But, I think within the larger context of what she's saying there, where are you, Romeo, doesn't make a lot of sense, though.
But that was like the basis of so many bad comedic sketches, I remember, you know?
Of course.
But this was a case where the cart became before the horse, though, because I knew wherefore art thou Romeo before I ever really knew the play.
That's convenient.
Yeah, I know.
Okay, next, while we're on Shakespeare, many, many people say, alas, poor Yorick, I knew him well.
Ah.
What is the actual line, the correct line from Hamlet?
I knew him, Horatio.
Yes.
Correct.
Where did the well come from, I wonder? Because it's not like you take a lot of liberties with Shakespeare when you perform it, you know?
I think it's one of those statements where the I knew him well sounds a lot better than I knew him, Horatio.
Well, yeah, because I can say it to you, because otherwise I'm talking to Horatio and it seems weird.
Yeah, and I think that's where it came into. It's like people sort of chucking it out as a normal statement, in a general way, and I think that's where it came in. That's my guess.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's sort of more quotable. Because you really need to have the whole thing, the fellow of infinite jest, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, and you don't want to go on and on quoting, Shakespeare.
That's true.
I might want to,
Get on with it.
Now that I know that, what do I do?
I guess it's a pretty good solution, though, if you really, really want to say, alas, poor Yorick, I knew him. That, to change the word instead of having Horatio there. And just saying I knew him feels a little incomplete for some reason. So.
It does. Yeah. It does to me, too.
It feels like truncated. It does.
Okay, Kath, you want to move to another one of your pet... You have a lot of pet peeves, I have to say, Kathy.
I'm a cranky little person, Ross.
Here's another one of Kathy's pet peeves that she trots out upon occasion. So go to it, Catherine.
Immaculate Conception.
Oh, sure.
Do you know what it technically means?
People think it means the virgin birth, but the Immaculate Conception was actually the conception of Mary, right?
Correct.
Without sin.
Without sin. Yeah.
With no original sin. Yeah, because that's the thing, because we have here, there's Assumption Day, and I forget the other one. There's the big one, the big Mary Day, and that's a pet peeve of mine, because people automatically think it's the virgin birth, but that's a very different thing. Mary's it.
Moving on to the penultimate. Mm-hmm. Kath and I were basically going back and forth, like, what are your literary pet peeves? What are they? And Kath goes, here's one. Elementary, my dear Watson, never appears in William, Conan, Bryan.
The famous author, William Conan Bryan.
And we were debating, does she mean, like, I mean, she William Cullen Bryant, Arthur Conan Doyle, sort of a mashup. Of
I have a knack for that. You've got it since I've been a kid. I have a real knack for mangling.
And I looked up, is there any William Conan? We couldn't find any William Conan Bryan, though.
But had there been one, elementary my dear Watson would not have appeared in it.
He does say elementary, though, doesn't he?
He does. He says elementary, but he never addresses Watson that way with elementary.
Right.
They say that the phrase actually was popularized in all the adaptations, sure. especially Basil Rathbone, of course.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah.
But the interesting thing here, going back to the last poor Yorick, I knew him well. Again, elementary, my dear Watson, is really iconic, and it's a really good phrase. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what happened. I mean, I think what happens is people slightly improve. They tinker with literature and they improve it to some degree. Mm-hmm. Elementary, my dear Watson, is wonderful to keep hearing it. And it's a shame that he hadn't written it. Which reminds us of this last brilliant segue, you have to admit, Kathy. Okay, play it again.
That's the one I kept thinking to bring up this entire time. But since we were talking about literature instead of films... Mm-hmm. I never did. Yeah, so in Casablanca, Ilsa tells, well, actually, they both say it. But so anyway, how much of this should I explain? There's a particular song that's so very important to Rick and Ilsa.
You must remember this.
Yeah, Ingrid Bergman, yeah.
This is just a kiss.
Exactly.
Very nice.
And,
yes.
and at some point, one or the other of them, both at various times, say, "Play it, Sam. Play as time goes by." That's what Ilsa says.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
I think later on Rick tells him to play it, but neither one of them ever says "Play it again, Sam."
Correct. But that's become the iconic phrase.
And yeah. Again, "Play it again, Sam" is better because it harkens back to the idea of the past and the future mingling, and it's really interesting because as we go through this, a couple of these changes are for. I don't think Jabberwock and Jabberwocky is good. It should be Jabberwock, but I think "Play It Again, Sam" is better than "Play It, Sam."
Not
the last poor Yorick.
I agree. If what you are doing is taking them out of context and using them in your conversation, mm-hmm. I don't think "Play It Again, Sam" necessarily works better. Yeah, within the film.
Yeah, it doesn't. That's a good point, Fletcher and Kath, because it doesn't really. You're right. Actually, when I think about it, I think "Elementary, My Dear Watson" does work better in the books. I think you guys are right though about "Play It Again, Sam." It doesn't make any difference, really.
No, because "Play It," Sam, because especially because when Rick is saying, he's like saying, "You played it for
play
her.
It.
Or I
yeah.
can
yeah.
take it. Play it. Play it,
yeah.
Sam."
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I'm sorry.
No, that's
that
great.
That was my drunken Humphrey Bogart.
I'm very impressed with your Humphrey.
Ahead of me if I ever want to stop writing. Okay, so now we just finished "Play It, Sam." Let's play it again, Fletcher.
Let's
We're
going
to return to a feature we always enjoy testing you on, the weird and wonderful world. God, I was really alliterative
yes,
that day.
You were.
Of word relatives. It's time for Related or Not.
Okay, very good, Kathy. You really are a very good alliterator.
Alliterator, I like that.
Alliterator, yeah. Okay, the first is tulip and turban, related or not?
Tulip and turban. You can definitely imagine how they are related. Let's say yes.
Let's say you're right.
Yay!
It was really interesting. And they're exactly the same word. And the word basically comes from Persian, dulband, and then it came into Turkish, I don't know if these pronunciations are correct, tulbent, and then into French, tulip or tulipan. But dulband in Turkish also meant, in Persian, meant turban as well.
Uh-huh.
So then it came in two different phases. The first phase apparently came as tulip, but it also came in another phase where it was directly translated into turban.
Well, turban, the thing is, though, because the tulip got its name because the tulip looks like a turban.
Like a turban, mm-hmm. Yeah,
okay.
Exactly.
Because that's all like folded in
on each
other.
Oh, that's right, you're
other.
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
I assumed that one got its name because it looked like the other one, but I certainly didn't know which one would have come first. So that's interesting. The flower looks like a turban, so that's why it got the name turban, tulip.
In Persian, yeah.
Mm-hmm,
and then
yeah.
They both words came into Europe at different times.
Yeah, split. Wow, that's really neat.
And then when the meanings diverged, the French changed it to turban, and then the tulip one was tulip, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
So moving on to another tradition, treason, and trade.
Sounds like a song.
It does. Yeah, it does.
Baubles, bangles, and beads.
No, it does actually. Don't sing it though, please, Kathy. Don't hum it.
Tradition, treason, and trade. All three related? Wow. I mean, I guess you're going to tell me yes, but I can't make it happen in my head. why that would be the case. Explain it to me.
Okay, this is really cool. Can you think of any... You can't, because you just asked. You can't. So they all come back from a root word in Latin, tradere, to turn over. Or to turn, you see what I'm saying?
It's
like, so basically you have like tradition, you're turning over, which becomes transmission, which is tradition. It's now traditionally been turned over. Treason, you're turning away from your country.
Mm-hmm.
Trade, you're trading your loyalty to another country, or you're trading goods to another person or whatever.
I'm turning it over.
I don't quite get treason, to be honest with you.
Oh, treason? That one's...
Yeah, the trading over aspects of that.
Actually, I think you're right. Treason seems to be more... I think, Catherine, you're right.
I wasn't trying to find fault. I just don't understand.
Well, I think you did find fault, and you did a very good job of finding fault. Treason comes from... I just looked it up. It's from trans, which is Latin, then dare. So it's basically to give over. You're turning over... your country. You're delivering up your country.
Ah, I see. You're handing it over to the enemy, in effect.
Wow, Catherine, your Latin is getting better and better.
I tell you. I don't know how it happens.
No, you caught me in a Latin mistake. You're right, completely.
But it does still come from the root word tradere.
Okay, I feel better now. Kath, why don't you just do this next talk in Latin so we can...
oh, gosh, look at the... I think my computer is... something went very wrong here.
Okay, another one, Fletcher. This one is easier. Convey and convoy.
Oh, that seems easy to connect. So I guess, yes, they are related, which probably means you're going to tell me no, they're not.
No, we're going to tell you yes,
okay,
they are.
Okay, good.
They both come from the Latin conviare, Ross?
Convenire. Oh, you're right. Vulgar Latin conviare. You're right. That's vulgar Latin.
I'm a vulgar
Latin
kind of person. What can I say?
Oh, Kathy, you're right. Yeah, it comes with, via would be, con would be with. Con would be from originally con, okay. Then it would assimilate. And then via is road. Kathy is completely correct. Again, you've corrected my Latin, Catherine, twice.
I don't know what's going on here. It's like Freaky Friday. But they are related. They both come from the same root. When did they diverge, Ross? I mean, how did they diverge? One came from...
the old French convoyer, to go together on the road. And then the other...
That was convey, though.
Convey. And then the other... They're both late 14th century, Kath.
Yeah.
So they didn't... I mean, they converged at the same... They diverged at the same time, really, in terms of meaning, it seems. The problem with that, though, is it's really difficult to figure... I mean, you know, we don't have tape recorders in 13th century or 14th century France, so we can't really be too sure when. But that seems to be the case.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this next one is really interesting. This one, this is actually in defense of the problems we have with Latin or word origins. Pen and pencil.
Oh, pen and pencil. Seems obvious they would be related. But no, those aren't related. They're just...
You're right!
Or I'm going to add maybe right.
Right, of course.
Kath, why don't you explain the difference right now? And I'm going to try to find my reference here.
Okay, a pencil... initially was a paintbrush with a very pointy little tapered end, and it went back to the Latin penicillus for paintbrush.
Penicillus, yes.
Penicillus, thank you. Pen goes back to the Latin penna for feather, because that's what the original pens were, like a quill.
Mm-hmm.
So you have penna, feather, pen,
mm-hmm.
penicillus, paintbrush, pencil.
Penicillus. Oh, I'm sorry. I wasn't really listening. Penicillus, yes.
Penicillus.
Penicillus. Yes. Penicillus.
It's illus.
Yeah, penicillus. Yes, penicillus. But here we have a problem. Penicillus is a brush or a sponge. Now, apparently, you know, this is going to be, it comes from an original word in Latin, penis.
Mm-hmm.
P-E-N-I-S.
Oh.
Which is tail, or in English, penis. And then from there, little tail became a pencil. Now, the question we have with, I have a very authoritative Latin etymological dictionary right here. And the question is, there's a big conflict in Latin chronology of this word. First of all, because tail seems to be older than penis. And then they're wondering, did tail come from a proto-old an old Latin word, pacinus, pacina, or penna, or did it come from penna? We don't know. So they could be related, and they may not be related.
Wow.
So Fletcher,
they're not. I say they're not.
Well, Catherine, I'm beginning to defer to your. I'm going to defer to your Latin expertise at this point. You may very well be right. So.
Okay, the next one is grammar, which we speak about, and glamour, which we all have.
Oh.
Ooh,
grammar,
I like that.
And glamour.
No, those aren't related. That's silly.
Fletcher.
Fletcher, here you were wrong.
You don't
grammar
say.
And glamour are related, and everyone knows, and Kathy and I certainly do, that studying grammar is a very glamorous profession.
Yes, yeah, of course. So,
just look how we're dressed. That, I think, was fascinating, because I would never have thought of it. The thing is that grammar came from the...
Well, it's from the Greek, grammatike, which is the art of techne in Greek is like a art or construction or building things. So it's the art of letters. And then in ancient Greek and in Latin, grammaticos or grammaticus became someone who was learned in letters. And grammar basically had a much broader definition in those times.
And then glamour came about in the 1700s. I mean, they say actually that, no, actually, it was an alteration of grammar because
the word
meant, like, then grammar was any sort of scholarship, but specifically occult sort of things, like your alchemy, your all of that thing. So it became, glamour became a word. They think it was popularized by Sir Walter Scott, but he wasn't the first one to use it.
Oh, no, that's true, Kat. I mean, to go into that, glamour apparently was popularized by him, but it's apparently, you're right, it was used a long time before.
And it
that.
Meant a magic, enchantment, or spell. It was an alteration of the grammar that they were using to refer to that learned sort of spell making. Magical alchemy stuff.
Right.
Yeah.
Which we do all the time here in our show.
That's right. A little bit of magic.
But that's the whole thing, because we forget often nowadays that glamour initially was magic or enchantment. Uh-huh. It was not like looking like hotsy-totsy, you know, movie starry glamour.
But you can see how it came, though. I mean, you can see how it works in that sense. Like in the occult, then suddenly you're knowledgeable, suddenly you know more, suddenly you're more beautiful, you're better, you're attractive, and then it goes into Hollywood. What we didn't realize, or at least I didn't, I think, Kath, you probably did, but I didn't really realize that it was so recent in terms of glamour with Hollywood. I think you said you did.
Oh, yeah, because you would cast a glamour, i.e. a spell, and make yourself beautiful or do this or that. And that's where you started getting the notion of glamour being beauty. But that didn't start until like the later 1800s, mid-1800s.
No, but in terms of Hollywood, though, apparently it was like it's sort of late in Hollywood. That's what got me.
Oh, yeah, that was the 30s.
Yeah, because I thought it would have been like from the first films or, acting and all of that. I would have thought glamour would have been earlier, the stage and all of that. Okay, do we have one time for one more, Fletcher?
Sure.
Okay, capital and capital. Now, we pronounce them roughly similarly, but it's AL capital and OL capital.
Right.
Are they related or not?
Well, they've got to be related somewhere back there. Maybe they diverged at some point, but, I mean, they both must be related to the head or something, right?
Well...
Kinda.
Yeah, exactly.
That's all I really wanted was kinda out of that one.
It seems that they possibly are. Let's put it that way, as Kathy said. It could come from the Latin caput, which means head. Caput, which means head. And then Capitol Hill in Washington comes from that. But we're not sure if it really does.
Capitol Hill, they said, was named after the Capitoline
Hill.
Thank you.
But the question with that, though, is Capitoline Hill related to
the head or not?
Yeah.
Because they say it looks like you could say like it comes out of the ground like a big head, right? A hill.
Yeah.
That seems really weak to me.
It does. I know. But I think it's really interesting, though, because, again, we go back to the real problems with studying language. We have no guys with tape recorders talking. How'd you get this? How'd you get the idea for calling this that? We don't know. That's what we think. I think it makes a lot of sense, actually.
That they're related.
Yeah.
I mean, because the capital A-L is the coming from the head. We know
yes.
that.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Did we say that? It is from caput.
Yes.
I love the fact that the using capital in the British way, like, oh, capital. Does anyone say that anymore? I don't even know.
I don't know. Old movies, they do. You're right.
Yeah, I just thought of that. But I just saw this, that came about in 1754. They think it came from ships in battle. Capital, capital.
You're Saying It Wrong is part of the NPR network and is produced in the studios of KMUW in Wichita, Kansas by me, Fletcher Powell. Kathy Petras records from her home in Armilla, Spain. Ross Petras from his home in Toronto, Ontario in Canada. Torin Anderson composed our theme music. Our digital team is Beth Golay and Carly Cooper. Carly Cooper is also our video editor. You can subscribe to our channel on YouTube. You can find all of our past episodes by subscribing to the You're Saying It Wrong podcast, wherever you get your podcasts, or by visiting us at kmuw.org. If you have a question for Kathy and Ross, if you'd like to suggest a topic or you just want to reach out, you can email me at powell@kmuw.org. or email them at kandrpetras@gmail.com. You can find all of their books pretty much anywhere you get books, and a handful of them are also available on audiobook, read by the authors themselves. Thanks for joining us. We'll be back next week.
These days, there's so much news, it can be hard to keep up with what it all means for you, your family, and your community. The Consider This podcast from NPR features our award-winning journalism. 6 days a week, we bring you a deep dive on a news story and provide the context and analysis that helps you make sense of the news. We get behind the headlines. We get to the truth. Listen to the Consider This podcast from NPR.